Hello, and welcome to Intuitive Conversations. I'm Chantal Neufeld.
I'm Tamara Franz.
And we love to talk about all things intuitive, and we love books and sharing what we've learned from them. And yeah, today we have some great books for you.
Yeah, we have three books that are all from Chantal's ideal bookshelf. Three books that we decided we wanted to talk about separately because there are so many connections between them. The first one is called Feeding Your Demons by Tsultrum Alioni. I hope I'm saying that right. The CIA Pattern by Sarah Carson and Sean Carson. And the other one was called Minds, right?
Yeah, by Sarah Yuen.
Right. And I think the connection between all of them is that they use the subconscious mind and harness the power of the subconscious to deal with trauma, to work through things, to find the way forward. So it's really about the power of your
subconscious mind
and your imagination.
Different ways and different modalities. Yeah.
Right. So where do you want to start?
I don't know. Where do you want to start?
Okay, let's just start with Feeding Your Demons, because you threw out so many teasers about that one in our last talk, and we both found this one amazing. This book describes a process that you can go through to deal with your inner demons, and in this model, a demon is anything that blocks you from having freedom of thought, freedom of will. Just feeling the freedom to direct your life and to be who you are, really.
Mm-hmm. Anything that holds you back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, what struck you? Like, what? How did you connect with this book?
Well, like, the title is a little alarming, right? Because as a child growing up in a cult, like, certain words were taboo, right? Mm-hmm. And demons being one of them. Yeah, I had several childhood experiences that would leave my definition of the word demon to be something that it's not talked about in this book. But this book, like, how do most people use the word demons in a sentence? Like, you know, like if they're just talking in everyday life, you know,
yeah.
Like, if they're struggling with an addiction or something
right.
like that, like what would they say?
Battling my demons.
Battling my demons.
Yeah.
And so that is the what most people think of. They need to battle them
mm-hmm.
instead of feed them.
Right.
This is changing the way we look at things that were suppressed. Isn't the word? The word I'm looking for is the things that we don't like about ourselves, the things that we disown.
Yeah.
Disown is the word I'm looking for.
Yeah, and the things that sabotage us
mm-hmm.
continually,
mm-hmm.
that hold us back, that keep us from,
Mm-hmm. But like, as I grow older, I realize everything's light and dark, everything's good and bad, like, you know, even our everyday life, like people say, how are you doing, how was your day? Well, my answer now is good and bad.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's just the way life is, and if we disown and suppress all of the bad without, like, bringing it to awareness and being like, what is this about? Like, what is this going to teach me? Or what, you know?
Yeah.
Then we're really left with being at war with half of life. When you're at war with half of life, you have such an inner conflict. And this is a way to resolve inner conflict.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And like you said, we live in a part of Canada, in a part of Manitoba, where the word demon is used in a very different way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not uncommon where we live to hear someone say something like, oh, Satan was really tempting me last night, or, you know. And I think that that view of good and evil, of angels and demons, whatever, kind of being at war with each other, is that the problem with it is that it's such a victim mentality,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Satan was tempting me, or I think this book, Feeding Your Demons, is all about the empowerment that comes with owning everything in your experience and learning how to transform that. Because when you suppress things, you are locking away your own power. Mm-hmm. And as soon as you can look at those things and kind of open the box on them, let them out, but have a process for dealing with them, the energy and the power that comes into you from being able to go through a process like that and to own every part of you is incredible.
Yeah, I find that even like, let's say some preachers, you know, like really famous people, they've suppressed certain things so much in their life that, you know, it became really big, because if you focus on resisting something, it grows. It doesn't diminish if you resist.
It's
so
like
acceptance is really the key instead of resisting. And that's, you know, sort of the theme of the book.
Yeah. Like the metaphor that just came to me as you were talking is trying to keep the lid on a boiling pot of something. And sooner or later, it'll blow. It'll spill over, right? But if you can take the lid off and add a few ingredients, you can make a wonderful stew, right? You can transform it into something that just fills your house with a wonderful aroma that satisfies you. And so the process in here, this comes out of the Buddhist tradition. It's written by a woman who trained for many years as a Buddhist nun and then kind of left that to enter into a partnership and get married, and then later in her life, through a series of things that happened to her, she came back to a teaching that she had learned about feeding your demons, and it's really about going through a process of several steps, and we can describe them briefly, but so that you're not fighting anymore.
Would you like to recall one of the stories in the book, or would you like to share your personal story? Either one would be good.
Well, I think the story that really struck me was she was married to an Italian man, and they had a set of twins, and one of them died a crib death. So I think that put a lot of stress on their marriage, and then at the same time, he was dealing with a lot of ego issues, and he was unfaithful to her, went through, you know, had different relationships, and she came to the point where she realized the marriage just wasn't going to work. And then at that point, they were locked in a struggle over their surviving son, and she wanted to move back to the States where she was from. But in Italian law, you cannot take a child away. The father would have to agree, or you would have to leave that child behind and move. And so they were in this bitter struggle about what was going to happen with their son. And they were due to go to court. And the night before, she remembered this practice. And she went through this process. And it's not about demonizing the other person. It's about dealing with the feelings that are in you around this situation and really coming into what you're feeling and facing that. And we'll describe the steps in a minute, but just the story went that she went through this process, and the next morning he phoned her and asked to meet and speak, and he had had a complete change of heart, change of position. He was ready now to let her take their son back to the United States, and told her that he trusted her to facilitate a relationship between him and his son, and he realized he had been unfair. And it was such a complete 180 turnaround. It was really striking. And it really made me think about what Einstein taught us, that everything is energy. And she made the statement that they were in this tug of war. And as soon as she let go of the rope by going through this process, it was like the energy of the situation completely shifted. And I thought that was so amazing. Yeah.
Which is one of those synchronicities that people can't explain. Yeah. And
I started thinking about what that feels like when you're holding on to the rope in a tug of war. And this could be any situation, not even with another person, but just a situation where you're in this struggle and you feel the tension. And imagine it as a tug of war rope that you're holding on to. And if you and your team decide together that you're all going to let go of the rope at the same time, you open your hands and you can imagine just that rush of open energy that comes with opening your hands and letting go. and the expansiveness that you feel, and all of a sudden the struggle is just gone. That's what came to me as I was reading that, and I thought, that sounds really powerful.
Mm-hmm. And it was.
Yeah.
Like it was a miracle. And you've seen it, happen in real life, too. Like, it's not just a story in a book.
Yeah.
And you've, done this experience yourself, and I've only done it, when I've gone to bed, because there's this YouTube recording that the author of this book goes through the process, on stage for a group of people, and so I followed the steps, but I didn't write them down. But Tamara's, written some of her stuff down, and it's a self-help healing thing where you don't necessarily have to go to a healer. I mean, it's helpful, but you can do this on your own. You can read the book and follow the steps.
Yeah.
And so, what are the steps as you recall them?
In preparation, you set out two chairs or two cushions, one for you and one for your so-called demon, because part of this process is that you are going to switch places at different points. And so to begin with, there's a series of breaths. So you check your body and look for any physical tension and breathe into that tension and breathe it out three times. And then you look for any emotional tension and do the same, and then any mental tension in your body. And then you sort of quiet your mind and make an intention that you're doing this work, not only on your own behalf, but for the greater good, for everyone who you encounter, because it will change you. And then you identify your demons. So beforehand, you might sit down and make a list of, what are all the issues in my life?
What's holding you back?
Yeah, where are the things where I'm experiencing tension, confusion, blockages, anything that keeps me from feeling completely free? You can make a list of those. And so after you have done the breathing to open yourself and relax, and then you set your intention, and then you decide, which demon am I going to work with? Once you decide that, you really tune in to your body, and you think about this issue, this conflict, whatever it is, this demon.
Like, if it were a color, what color would it be?
Yeah, you locate it in your body.
Yeah.
Where does this thing concentrate mostly in my body? And it could be more than one place, but you sort of tune in. Where do I feel this when I think about this issue and how it makes me feel? Where do I locate that in my body? And you really intensify that and let yourself fall right into it. And then start thinking, if this was a color, what color would it be? If this was a shape, what shape would it be? If it was had texture, what would that be like? So you really get a sensory connection with that demon, so-called. And then you project it outwards, as if it was sitting across from you on that other chair or that other cushion. And in your mind's eye, you're imagining this as a being with arms and legs, with eyes. It could be sort of a human-like, or it could be like a monster. Just think about what shape that takes. Get a real sense of what it looks like, the skin, what's the expression on the face, what the eyes look like. Just really picture that as clearly and vividly as you can. And then there are three questions to ask. What do you want? What do you really need? And how will you feel when you get what you want? Before it has a chance to answer, you switch places and you put yourself into the skin and into the seat of that demon, and just really, again, imagine as vividly as you can, what does it feel like to be in that body? How are you feeling physically? How do you feel mentally, emotionally? Just tune yourself in. And then as you, in your mind's eye, look across at your own seat, how do you see yourself from the point of view of that demon? And then you answer those three questions. What I really want is, what I really need is, and how I feel when I get what I want is. And as soon as you hear the answer to that last question, then you know what that demon wants and needs, and you switch back to your place. So if the demon is wanting to disempower you, I want to take your power from you, what I really need is to feel empowered. And when I feel empowered, I will feel confident in myself. I will really know who I am. That's what you want to feed the demon. And so you come back to your seat and you visualize your body dissolving and becoming a nectar. And the nectar has the quality of whatever it is that was named as, this is how I will feel when I get what I really need. And then you imagine yourself feeding that to the demon in whatever way. It could be that the demon drinks it out of a glass or a straw. It could be the demon bathes in it. Maybe you pour it over the demon. Maybe it becomes something like air that the demon can breathe in. In whatever form, you feed the demon the nectar, and you watch what happens. You feed it and feed it, and you have an infinite supply, and you watch the transformation as the demon is being fed. It will shift, it will change, it might dissolve, it might change shape.
But something it looks different after.
There will be a change. And if the demon completely disappears, that's fine. If it changes into something else, then you can ask, are you the ally? If it disappears, you can invite the ally to appear. But in any case,
there is an ally.
There can be an ally, and again, you visualize that ally and really get a sense of what it looks like, the feeling that you get from that ally sitting across from you. And then there are four questions to ask. How can you help me? How will you protect me? What pledge or commitment will you make to me? And how can I access you? And then you do the same thing. You switch places. Put yourself in the position of that ally, in that body, in that skin. Think about how it feels. See yourself across, sitting across, and how you view yourself. And then answer those four questions from the point of view of the ally. And then once that's done, you move back to your seat. And you see your ally dissolving into light. And that ally dissolves into your body. And then your body dissolves. And you just rest in the awareness that's there. It's a really beautiful, beautiful process.
In the book, she says that's one of the most important parts, is that last part where you just, you know, it's like a nothingness, but an everythingness.
Yeah. It's really, I guess your expansiveness is you kind of become one with everything.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a really wonderful, empowering, validating process, because with this, there's nothing you need to hide from anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You can work with demons of shame and guilt and trauma.
Depression
and
anxiety.
Yeah.
Anything.
Yeah. So it can become a spiritual practice. I've been doing this weekly now for over a month.
A while,
I think.
Yeah. And you could do like physical ailments too.
Right. Yeah. Anything that keeps you from
living your best life. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's incredible. And the book is full of stories. Like,
yeah.
I can't even count how many stories. Like, it's just woven throughout.
And if you watch her, she just has this wonderful, gentle, very calm, centered presence.
Mm-hmm.
Her voice is very calming.
Mm-hmm.
So if people are interested, we could post the link and the time in the video when she goes through that process.
Yeah, we'll do that.
Yeah.
Or you can contact us and we'll send you that link.
Yeah. And I think it's just like you were saying, we suppress a lot of things. Things that we're afraid to look at, things that we're afraid to own.
Or that we've been taught as a child is bad.
Is wrong, is bad. And we know the more you try to suppress, the more something persists and it'll jump up and bite you.
Yeah.
It's almost like a safe container for you to look at the things within you that are scary.
Mm-hmm.
And then you don't feel like a victim to your demons anymore.
And so often the things we disown in ourselves, we judge in other people.
We project them onto.
And so like people say, when you have a trigger, when someone else triggers you, it's not about the other person. It's really an invitation to look inside and say, why is what that person doing bothering me so much? Yeah. And it's usually one of these demons that you need to, you know.
Yeah, yeah. There are so, I go back to mythology because this is kind of my reference point for understanding the world, but so many mythologies where, you know, there's a monster.
Mm-hmm.
in a cave, in a labyrinth, a dragon, whatever. And of course, in our mythologies, we're slaying the dragon.
But the dragon has a gift, or there's a treasure in the cave or something.
Yeah. And so it's not so much like we're recognizing that those, on a mythological level, that dragon is a part of us that we've projected outward.
Mm-hmm.
And so rather than slaying the dragon, you're feeding the dragon. She tells a wonderful story in the book about Gandhi, and how, I guess the British government was sending representatives because they were having the salt protests. The British government wouldn't let them, they had to buy salt that was British salt and it was being taxed and everything. And he was leading this protest and they were making their own salt from the sea and everything, and it was really undermining. And the British government was sending representatives to talk to him, and his followers said, well, should we put nails on the roads so that their tires, give them flat tires and they can't get here? And he thought for a minute and said, we will do no such thing. Well, what can we do? They asked, and he said, we'll feed them. Make tea. We'll invite them to tea.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so over tea and conversation, they talked and they talked. And by the time those men left, they were on board with him. And
the creating rapport.
And again, it's that whole shifting of the energy, because you remove all resistance on your part, and that energy completely shifts. It's like letting go of the rope.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I find this a really powerful practice. And it really,
I think it's something that's going to be a part of our lives and of our therapeutic practice going forward, just because of how much it's helped us so far and how much it just ties into the training that we've already had.
Right. So,
and you've already facilitated this for people. So.
Yeah, it's, and I think even if you almost don't believe it, if you're willing to just give your imagination a little bit of space to try.
It's just a metaphor.
It really does work.
Even if we can't explain how it works, it works.
So I'm going to segue from this into the CIA pattern.
Perfect.
Because one of the sessions that I had was feeding my demons. In that session, the ally that turned up was Bette Midler.
Nice.
And I was at the same time going through the CIA pattern book and creating my Council of Inner Advisors, and I thought, wouldn't she be a great person to bring some sass and total uninhibitedness
which
to my inner
council?
Yeah, which I can use some of. So go ahead and talk about this book and how you discovered it and what this is all about.
How I discovered it was on a Facebook group. Hypnotherapists were sharing books that they've written. And this was one of them, and she talked about like how it came to be and everything, and I just thought the concept of it was incredible. Like the power of our imaginations is way more in depth than we could ever even think. Like the power of our dreams are way more in depth than we could think. Like, and our dreams are metaphors. And so the CIA pattern, CIA stands for Council of Inner Advisors. And it's about picking a group of people, like maybe 10-ish people, doesn't have to be that many, can be more, can be less, of people who are different than you, have a different perspective, but that you admire, or that have made an impact on your life. And, so she goes to this, or they go through this process of, like, choosing, how to choose them, how to, like, sort of interview them, and you can have different sort of meeting places. You can have like an oval table, like a business meeting sort of thing, and invite them in one at a time and ask them advice for what you need going forward in life or in business or whatever issue you're facing. And they answer, because you already know them through, like, they can be dead or alive, but you already know them, their personalities, through what you've seen on video or what you know in real life, and they have this just a different perspective that can just totally bring something new to what you're looking for.
Mm-hmm. It is. I love any process that harnesses the power of imagination. And they referenced Napoleon Hill, who was like the big, I guess, pioneer about positive thinking. And he wrote this book, what was it? Was it Think and Grow Rich? Or,
yep.
Anyway, which I haven't read. But since him and his book, so much has been learned about the mind-body connection. And it's used in sports psychology, and it's used in medicine by doctors who are kind of at the cutting edge of this sort of thing. And we do hear a lot now about visualization and the power of that. So I've been reading through this. I'm not finished yet. But as I've been going along, I've been creating my council, creating my meeting space, and it's just so much fun. You know, you can really let your imagination loose.
Yeah, so like one of the people that is on my council is Sandra Bullock. She has the same personality as my sister, and so I've never met Sandra Bullock, but I've met my sister. And so just bringing her in and her, like, the twinkle in her eye and just her sass and her, like, how she would respond to different things, like, is a totally different perspective than I would have. And so just asking her a question and listening to the answer, you actually do get an answer, and it's incredible. Another person that I really admire is Oprah.
Oh,
and you know, like, she's so, like, deep and in-depth, and her voice and her energy is just,
she's got,
like,
a great voice. I love
her. Powerful. Just, like, she knows what she, and when she says it, it's, like, truth, you know? And so when you ask her a question, she'll just tell you.
Oh, yeah.
You
she know? Just sits in her own confidence.
Yes.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah.
And it's so different than my personality, and that's the whole thing, is to get someone who's different than you. You're not supposed to get a council of people who are all the same as you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that probably won't help you get out of whatever.
No,
because
then you'd be seeing the same perspective that you're in.
Yeah.
Another person that's on mine is Ellen DeGeneres.
I love Ellen.
She makes a joke out of everything. You know, everything is fun. She brings the fun, and you got to have fun. You got to bring the fun and some of that energy into some of the serious things in life.
But she has such a big heart at the same time.
Yes. Yeah. No, she's incredible. And
and so much courage. Like,
like, she feels the fear and does it anyways. Like,
yeah.
I saw her interview with David Letterman, where she really opens up and is vulnerable about her abuse in her past, and also about that she is scared to go out and do what she does, but she does it anyways, because so often we think, oh, these celebrities or these speakers, they're not scared, but everyone that I've asked is scared, and they do their push-ups, or they do their affirmations, and they get out there, they do that 20 seconds of courage, and once you do the 20 seconds of courage, then, you know, you just get in the flow, and you just start channeling, and you say what needs to be said.
Yeah.
So what about you? Like,
they talk in here about creating different councils for different things, right? Because you might need different types of advice or different qualities to deal with different aspects of your life or different issues. So I've been creating my first council just as a sort of a general guidance, life purpose, life path council. So I mentioned Bette Midler already, right? Somebody who brings the fun and the total uninhibitedness and the sort of, I don't, what you think of me is none of my business attitude. So I've got her on the council. Laura Day, just for that practical intuition, and because I'm at a point in my life where I'm really trying to reconnect with my intuition, having discounted it and dismissed it, and separated myself from it for so much of my life. Martha Beck is on there.
Personality.
Yeah, she's the original life coach, and she has so many wonderful techniques for getting at what your inner voice is telling you, and she's just a lot of fun. J.K. Rowling, for the writing aspect, because as a writer, you know, I want somebody on my council who knows that life, and she overcame so much struggle to become a writer. And I have Greta Thunberg, who I want that. As a kid, I was a spunky kid. I was a kid with a mouth.
Bold.
Yeah, and I really learned to suppress that part of myself, because in a religious culture, in a sort of patriarchal religious culture, being a girl who speaks her mind, who's a bit sassy, who, you know, doesn't censor herself too much, That causes a lot of discomfort for people around you. And if you're a sensitive person, if you're empathic, you really feel that. And so yeah, she's there to help me claim my voice, and she's just out there doing what she sees needs to be done, not stopping too much. She's not overthinking the way I overthink everything, right? She's just out there saying what her heart is saying and just being bold and telling her truth. And I have Joan of Arc, who from childhood, I've just always been fascinated. I'm not sure why. Maybe because she was so ready and willing to listen to the voices that told her what to do. And just boldly stepping forward. And I have a lot of fascination around her. Tony Robbins is on my council. And I have to say, I'm still pretty intimidated by him. He's a big guy with just huge energy, very assertive.
Did you watch his latest Netflix special?
No, I haven't. You'll have to send me the link.
Okay.
But he's everything that I'm not. So he's a complete polar opposite, and I'm still not sure how I feel about...
You don't want him to take over the council.
I mean, yeah, I know. That it's true.
He'll just stand up at the end of the table.
And I know. I'm a little worried that he's going to like, yeah. And because I've struggled with assertiveness in my life. Right, I don't want him to bully me into doing things that I'm not ready to do, that I'm not comfortable, and I also don't want him like sort of haranguing me for not being assertive enough. So I'm still a little apprehensive about what's going to come from him. Wayne Dyer, just, you know, Wayne Dyer reminds me of my dad. He in some ways kind of looks a bit like my dad, but he just has that really calm, gentle presence, and I'll
keep Tony Robbins in mind for you.
That's right. Well, they're seated next to each other
for a reason.
Yeah. And then I have Gandalf, the wizard, because I had to have somebody, of course, from Lord of the Rings. So he's my wise guide on the council. Edgar.
Can you just like hear the voice?
Oh yeah. Yeah, like he's also gonna maybe keep Tony Robbins.
Put him on the other side of Tony.
Edgar Cayce, who is one of the most famous and studied intuitives or psychics in history, and who founded the university where I did my master's in transpersonal studies. He just has access to that universal knowledge. And I even have a space in my council room where he can go lie down and go into trance and can give messages necessary. And he's just such a gentle, humble presence, so much integrity, so much honesty, and also comes from a religious background that was very, you know, kind of black and white conservative. And so he's the permission for me to explore that wide world of things. And the last person is Anthony Gaudi, the architect who pioneered modernism and that big church, the Sagrada Familia in Barcelona, that's being built since 1882 or whatever, was his great vision. And so he's the one that is on my council with that, just that huge vision. And being able to take something that huge and make it concrete, and to be willing to embark on a vision that wouldn't be realized in his lifetime. And he was just so different, so new, a thinker out of the box. And because we're planning a trip to Spain, we're going to be going to Barcelona, and I'm going to see all of his architecture. I'm just so intrigued with him. So I wanted him on my council to just bring in that imaginative vision. So yeah, and then an extra seat for whoever might show up at any given meeting. So
nice.
I have a council of 13, including me.
And this year's indoors or outdoors? Like you can choose your place.
Yeah, yeah. I actually had Anthony Gaudi design the space. So it's kind of like a more or less round, large, huge round space on an island. So there are some bridges, like a moat around the island. But you know, his architecture was all about flowing lines and colored glass and just mimicking shapes of nature. So kind of the spines of the building are like tree trunks that come and meet up, and there's a huge skylight window sort of at the top of the room, and then colored glass around that, and a huge round table in the center for us all to sit at. And then there's a fountain in the middle of that table. So just the calm, the calming sound of water and nature. And so, yeah, there's lots of light, lots of glass
like
and windows.
Gazebo-ish.
Yeah, it has a real gazebo feeling. But there's a fireplace in there, too, for warmth in the when it gets a little cooler. And, yeah.
Wow, who wouldn't want to go there when it's...
Right, yeah.
That sounds incredible. Wow. And just like you said, he designed it. Like, it came through when you asked.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. So it's a little bit going, having a... Working with this process is like a bit like going into meditation. Mm-hmm. And just letting your imagination create for you this meeting place, this gathering of people and bringing them together, and just letting your inner voice speak to you through them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like it's all about slowing down your brain waves in order to get to that state. Mm-hmm. So there's different, like there's a brainwave state when you're awake and alert and doing things throughout your day, and then there's a meditative state, and there's a hypnotic state, and then there's a sleeping state. And so it's kind of like in that sort of when you just start to fall into sleep at night, like when you just start to dream, you know, where you can sort of create your dreams, like if you can stay in that state.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that's what a hypnotherapist does. It brings you to, a hypnotherapist can bring you to that state and then have you make the healing changes.
Yeah, and I think as you slow your, like with each state, you connect with a wider version of yourself, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're moving away from the little monkey mind that's constantly thinking and overthinking and ego-based, and moving gradually into a wider and wider and wider version of yourself, where eventually your consciousness expands to the point where you can open yourself and receive guidance from sources that are larger than yourself.
It reminds me of that one TED talk by Elizabeth Gilbert, the author of Eat, Pray, Love.
Mm-hmm.
And she talks about the inner genius.
Oh.
Where people, have you seen it?
I might have, a long time ago.
She talks about where nowadays people say they, you know, that they are a genius if they write a book. And she was talking about like the pressure after you have a bestseller to repeat that again. Like so often these artist types or writers, they get depressed because, you know, they had come to them before and now it wasn't coming to them and they thought it was themselves. It was very ego-based. But she said, you know, a long time ago, they would refer to genius as they have a genius or the genius flowed through them, you know, meaning that, and she tells stories of like this poet, you know, she would be out in her garden and she would feel or see a poem coming over the hill and she'd run inside to grab pen and paper so that she could capture the poem before it, you know, kept going along.
Yeah.
And, you know, for anyone who is a poet or a songwriter or a writer, like, you know, you have these feelings when you just have this download of information coming through and you've got to get it out. And if you don't, like, it's lost, right?
Yeah.
And so then it just really leaves you with a bigger perspective. And then, like, I am not the genius. The genius comes through, and you can ask for help, and it can come through, too.
Yeah. To engage in any of these processes, the feeding your demons and the CIA pattern, like, you really have to get past the skepticism of we've been so conditioned to be in our minds and to distrust anything that isn't a linear thought pattern, that's not based on material reality. And you have to kind of battle the resistance to that thing of, oh, I'm just making this up. It doesn't count because I'm just making it up.
Yeah, well, that was your experience at first with hypnotherapy. You felt like you were just making it up. And
and you know, in some respects, that's still my experience, even though I went through years of training with guided imagery and music, and because I'm an educator and part of the academic world, I have a foot in that world. I have another foot in the more intuitive, imaginative world, and that's a can be a tricky tension to hold.
Mm-hmm. And but, to trust the first answer that right, comes through, and to yeah. trust your intuition, and to trust.
We have not been, we've not been conditioned to trust our intuition.
We've been taught to question it.
And the more conservative a religious belief system is, the less trust there is in the imagination and the intuition.
Yeah.
And you have to, and at the same time, when you sit down and have a meditation and feed your demons or have a CIA council meeting, you can say you're making it up. But then afterwards, you can also say, why would I choose to make up this particular experience as opposed to something else? Why did this symbol come to me? Why did these words come to me? There's still a filter there that's bringing you what feels right in that moment, what is needed, what you can use, the wisdom, the kernels of wisdom that are in there. And so it really is like building a muscle. You have to just keep coming back and saying, I'm going to trust the process. I'm going to trust my intuition. I'm going to trust what comes to me.
Well, like growing up with a very strict religious background, like everything was about truths. Like this is truth and that's false. And, you know, like I think that maybe some personalities are drawn to that more than others. Like, but I had so much freedom myself in just being like, it's okay not to know. It's okay not to know the answers. Yeah. It's okay not to understand how it works and why it works. I can be as curious as I want, but the trust is so important in just like trusting your imagination. Like I tell my clients too, the first answer that comes through when you're in trance is the right one. Like when your brainwaves are slowed down, like the first answer that comes through is right. Like your conscious mind's going to come in and say, how could that be right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we're constantly undermining ourselves.
But when you spend more time in meditation, then you do have this sort of inner peace and bigger perspective and are able to follow the first gut instinct. You know, like everyone has had that where they meet someone for the first time and they have this gut instinct that this is not a person to be trusted. Well, go with that, even if there's no actual evidence that they're not to be trusted, because, like, there are other powers that be in play that can tell you these things.
Yeah. And we talked about the wisdom of the body and how you pick up so many things that your conscious mind is not aware of. And so, yeah, there's a whole conglomeration of sensations that are coming to you from that person or from a situation. And if you go solely into your thinking mind, you try to rationalize, you try to reason things out, you get into the hamster wheel of overthinking, when really your entire body system and your intuition was telling you something and giving you a message that you needed to listen to.
And the third book is Minds.
M-Y-N-D-S.
M-Y-N-D-S by Sarah Ewan. And it was, what was the...
Well, the subtitle.
Subtitle was something like Soldiers with PTSD, like how they received help through therapy, or it was something like that.
Yeah.
So that book is amazing because of its detailed case studies of how she helped these men. Like, it's their stories, which are horrific. I had to skip over some of them. That's how horrible they were. But what she did and the different, like, hypnotherapy, you know, things that she learned that she used with them, and how it shifted their inner world. Like, it shifted their subconscious mind, which was their body. Like, they were having all sorts of symptoms from PTSD, and rightfully so. They went through some horrible stuff, but she was able to get them back to living a normal life again.
Yeah, these were soldiers who had been through various conventional, like every one of them, she talks about what the different therapies they had tried before coming to her. And none of these things were working for them.
Well, because talk therapy can re-traumatize.
Yeah.
Because it's all in the conscious mind.
Yeah. And the EMDR, which is like, is that the eye movement? Yeah. So again, they were re-traumatizing from that therapy. And each one of them had a minimum of 3 or 4 sessions with her. And I think the most that anyone had was 6 or 7.
And they were helped, and each one, like each set, as each session went on, they were helped a little bit more and a little bit more. But as they went to sleep, like their dreams and everything, like that was all processing the healing that had taken place during hypnotherapy. It was, you know, like clearing out stuff, and it's hard to even explain. Like, you'd have to read the book to get it, but. Mm-hmm. How do you feel that the Minds book ties into the other two books? Like, what is the similarity?
I think it's just the power of the subconscious mind and accessing what's in the subconscious mind. There's the, you know, we talk so much about the shadow we talk. I mean, that's kind of become common terminology, dealing with my shadow. And we think of that as a bad thing. This is the place where we put all the parts of ourselves that are not acceptable, that we don't want to deal with, and lock away a little bit of our own power each time we do that. Mm-hmm. So dealing with the shadow and visiting some of that trauma is frightening to people. But the, you know, as you work on a subconscious level through hypnotherapy or through guided imagery and music or through the feeding your demons, the CIA work.
It's all very similar.
All of those modalities provide a safe container. You either have someone there with you guiding the process, or there is a process to go through with steps so that you have the security of knowing this is what's going to happen, this is how I can go through, or there's going to be a guide for me. And then you reclaim
a little more power. It's a comfortable process.
Yeah, I was struck reading those case studies how it never really sounded some of them had real breakthrough moments in sessions, but a lot of them didn't. And a lot of times there would be things that happened between sessions where you'd think, oh, this is stirring up trauma, this is coming up for them. And she's obviously an experienced hypnotherapist and trusts the process, and they trust her to guide them through the process, because it would be easy to pull out and say, this isn't helping, after one or two sessions or three sessions. But
they got enough help to come back. Like.
Yeah, but it wasn't like there was this steady, oh, I'm this much better. Hmm. I'm this much better after each session.
Usually when people say breakthrough, they mean their conscious mind understands what happened, right?
Hmm.
And so this is all taking place subconsciously.
Yeah.
Often, you know, they're in such a deep trance, they don't necessarily remember all of the, you know, the changes that they made.
But I think the mind wants so much to be able to track the process. And, you know, we're in this scientific model where you're supposed to be able to measure everything, right? So I want to be able to measure after each session how much better I am.
That's what I love about this book, is that she actually does measure it. And usually, you know, people don't. They go from session to session. And,
yeah.
You know, and that's what I love about it, that it's sort of, to me, it's science.
Yeah. But at the same time, it's not evident, right? Like, they, after about 4 or 5 sessions, they were really seeing the difference that it was making in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not like you could put your finger on and say,
oh, well, I can speak to that, you know, exactly, because I've been to a lot of hypnotherapy, and like, yes, I'm a completely different person than I was 5 years ago, but after a session, you don't notice this mm-hmm. huge change, like, because it's subconscious, like, because the pathways in your mind are rerouted to do automatically a certain new thing. You think, oh, I've always been this way. Oh, I've always been happy. You know, oh, I've always been, but then, you know, someone who lives with you could be like, wow, what a big difference, whereas you yourself wouldn't necessarily notice that. Does that make sense?
It does. Like, I think everybody's looking for the big breakthrough, right? I want to have the lightning bolt experience that, you know, makes me a different person tomorrow than I was today.
Mm-hmm.
But those changes are subtle because it's subconscious. But it reorients your thinking in every way without you really,
And with the timeline therapy, when you go back to the first time you experienced a certain emotion, or the first time you made this limiting belief as a child, once you reframe that from your childhood perspective, it automatically, like a string of pearls, mm-hmm. all the other times in your life where you've had that limiting belief, it switches it.
Yeah.
So,
and that's the amazing thing is that when you read this book, it's like this really hopeful, wonderful feeling that you can heal your past.
Mm-hmm.
You almost change the past. Not that those things, the traumatic things, it's not that they never happened.
Mm-hmm.
But you completely change the orientation of your thinking toward them.
Yeah.
And the energies you feel around that.
Oh, I totally can speak to that.
Yeah.
Well, I had several traumatic things. My daughter was in an accident. It took her a long time to heal from. I watched my sister, 25-year-old sister, die from cystic fibrosis. And then my 21-year-old brother died from suicide. And those were all very, very traumatic things. I could not talk about them without, like, crying for a long time. Now I'm able to talk about them as if they happened to someone else. Yes, I have the memory. I can, you know, go back to the hospital room, see myself collapsing on the floor, but my body does not feel like my body did when it collapsed on the floor, because I've healed that mm-hmm. in my body, you know, and so I can look at all of things in my past as sort of the hero's journey. I know people say a lot of insensitive things when people die, like, you know, maybe this was for the best, or, you know, they're happy now in heaven, or, you know, almost everything someone can say to you after someone dies is not the right thing to say.
Right, yeah.
Like, but people often want to help when someone dies, and so, like, bringing someone food, good thing to do. Sitting with someone in their grief, having it be okay for that person to cry, having it be okay to just be quiet and just have them say all of the things they want to say, even if they're, like, embarrassed for saying them or they feel guilty for saying them or whatever, just so they can just vent, like, that is helpful. I kind of got off track there. But, yeah, what we were saying is that you can recall traumatic events after hypnotherapy
mm-hmm.
without feeling that in your body, without getting re-traumatized again.
Yeah, and that's so liberating.
Mm-hmm. To be able to tell your story is liberating.
Well, to be able to own your entire life and mm-hmm. everything that's happened in it,
mm-hmm.
and to not, have slivers of yourself locked away,
suppressed, in a box.
Because you can't revisit, can't think about, can't talk about these things.
And think about all of the coping mechanisms, all the avoidance strategies that you would have to have in place to stay away from those boxes as you go about your everyday life.
Yeah.
Like, it's very limiting.
Mm-hmm. And people feel the resistance in you
mm-hmm.
Because you have to guard yourself. You have to be on guard constantly, that you're not stepping into dangerous territory.
And how much energy does that take out of you?
A lot.
Yes, so that's why we love this work so much. Because when you heal things at the subconscious level, the change is immediate. Even if you don't notice it consciously, it makes a huge shift in your energy levels, mm-hmm. in your happiness levels, in everything.
Yeah. There's the myth of the wounded healer, probably in a lot of mythologies, but especially in Greek mythology. Chiron was a centaur who became the teacher for Asclepius and some of the other great heroes in mythology, but he was wounded by a poison arrow that he had fashioned, and that was a wound that was never going to heal. But he used that wound to create medicine for other people. And so the idea is that everyone has kind of an original wound that goes deep back into your childhood. Or you have traumatic experiences like these soldiers did. And when you're able to deal with that, process it, you can transform that wound into medicine that you can bring into the world
mm-hmm.
for other people.
That's beautiful.
And I mean, the 12-step process, Alcoholics Anonymous, is all about alcoholics helping each other because they know the territory. They've been down that road.
And therapists are the same.
Yeah. A lot of people are drawn into therapy because of their own difficult experiences and challenges in life. So
I know, like, the theme of my life, you know, up to this point recently, it's been rejection and, like, social anxiety. And so, I love that metaphor that you used about using that as medicine.
Yeah, and the really interesting thing from an astrological viewpoint is that Chiron is a star or a mini planet in the astrology chart, in the map of the stars. And when you're born, whatever house or where the position that it's in your chart, I'm not an astrologist, so I'm speaking in very general terms, but it indicates that wound that you're dealing with. And because it's so far out in our solar system, by the time it comes around again into that same place is around when you're 50.
Interesting.
So when people talk about the midlife crisis, you know, that's the return of Chiron bringing you, because now through your life experience and as an older person, you have so much more awareness to bring to that wound. Now's the time in your life where you can work with that wound and revisit it on a more conscious level and turn it into that medicine.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really beautiful.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, that was the work with these soldiers and feeding your demons and the CIA pattern. These are all ways of working with that wound.
And you can do it for yourself, you know, which is very empowering, and you can do it with a guide. And so like, you've done things for yourself using these books, and so have I, but I would love to, like, trade sessions and, like, have a guide through it, because I feel like you would go deeper if you didn't have to write down your answers, or you could remember.
Yeah. Or someone, you have someone there that can respond to you in the moment.
Being, like, in hypnotherapy, like, having a hypnotherapist guide me through things, I love that I can just visualize and just get deep into it and not have to worry about where I am in the process. Mm-hmm. Like, not having the conscious mind be so involved allows you to go deeper.
Yeah.
And so
yeah,
I look forward to learning these things more in depth and offering them to my clients.
Yeah. And we'll have more. I'm sure we'll find more books.
Oh, yes, we will. And let us know if you have any books you'd like us to read and review.
Great.
And until next time. Keep following your heart song.